Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to the Marriage Fitness Plugged-In Program with Mort Fertel. This is Mort Fertel, and this is your once-a-month Q&A teleconference. Welcome back to those of you that have been in the program for months, and in some cases even years, and a very special welcome to those of you that are new to the Marriage Fitness Plugged-In Program. For those of you that are new, this Q&A teleconference, in terms of its format, won't be much of a surprise to you. It works the same as the format of the Q&A in your previous program. That is, star 6 cues you up for a question. If you do come on the line to ask me a question, please remember to start with your question. Almost all of you are veterans at this point, so we'll just dive in and maximize our time with the Q&A. I'll start, as I often do, with a couple of questions that were emailed in advance by people who couldn't attend live. Of course, this is being recorded so they can hear the question and my response. So let's start with those two, then we'll spend the rest of the evening with those of you on the phones. Dear Mort, can you please help me understand what seems to be conflicting concepts? I want to make sure I am finding the right balance with a husband having an 18-month affair who has no intention of ending it. If, by the way, there's no adulterer who has any intention of ending an affair. If I employ all your recommended actions and my interactions with him are kind, thoughtful, treating him like a prince, and where needed, using I feel sentences, he will feel uncomfortable by his lack of action and unkindness and change his behaviors, hopefully changing feelings and decisions over time. However, if by me doing so I make him feel bad, guilty, or angry, won't he want to be as far away from me as possible? How do I be my best self, show him how it could be, and not push him further away because he wants to avoid the feelings of guilt and remorse and that come up for him? Many thanks, Mort, Kate. Okay, Kate, your question demonstrates that you're a great student and that you really understand many of the principles and practices that I'm teaching and their effect and consequences. I wish I had a really neat answer that brilliantly reconciled the problems, that the challenges that you identify. But I have to be honest, I don't. This is somewhat paradoxical, and there is no perfect, seamless strategy that has no consequences and it just goes smoothly from the beginning. So you're asking a good question, but you're asking it. I don't know if you're a math professor or a scientist or a business person. It's a very, very logical question, which is a compliment. A logical question sort of demands this very rational, logical response. I can't really completely provide that. I mean, you're right, and you got me, and I don't have a way out that's perfect, that's seamless, that makes complete sense. What I can tell you is that, what's your alternative, right? Let's look at it the other way. If you were not killing him with kindness, if you were just leaving him alone, giving him space, or the other alternative is to be a real witch and to criticize, condemn, and complain. I mean, after all, he is betraying you. Give him what he deserves, kick him to the curb, right? Make him pay the price, make him want you, like all of this stuff that you hear. You're a very logical, rational thinker, I can tell from your questions. So just play out for me the consequences of those approaches. They're much worse. Those approaches actually have almost zero hope, zero benefit. They have zero chance of getting you anywhere. Now, it's true, when you take the approach that I'm recommending, it is going to tug on his conscience. It is going to tug on his heart. Using your words, the result might be that he feels somewhat guilty. And since he feels that way, there will be a part of him that will want to try to distance himself from you. Look, I don't avoid this in the program. I just approach it from a slightly different angle, so maybe you don't recognize it. But this is why I talk so much about the obstinate spouse's reaction to your efforts being such a terrible indicator of how you're really doing. This is why I talk so much about how things almost always get worse before they get better. Because the very things you need to do to have a chance to turn this around are the very things they're not going to want you to do. So they're either going to react negatively to it, and or they will try to distance themselves from you. However, and maybe you'll find this to be a partial answer to your question in a way that does make sense, regardless of the fact they're feeling guilty, regardless of the fact that they might react negatively to it, or in your case you're suggesting he's going to try to distance himself from you, in all cases, you still will have access. You still will have the opportunity to create interactions with him. And so even though there might be this part of him that tries to distance himself from you, it's not like he's going to be able to completely succeed with it. Either because of practical circumstances will bring you together, or simply because your own initiative will be enough to create opportunities for you to have interactions that he won't be able to stop. For example, you could be separated by thousands of miles, but if you're sending him a gift on a weekly basis, and it's really thoughtful, something that touches his heart, so you don't need his participation, cooperation, or reciprocation to do that. Now, that's just an example, right? There's dozens and dozens of ways that you can create interactions despite the fact that they are trying to distance themselves from you. It's important. We already know, and from a different angle, I talk about this a lot in the program. We already know that the obstinate spouse is going to initially react negatively to your efforts. They're going to either try to distance themselves, they're going to react negatively. You have to be very careful not to be deterred by that. Because if you are, and if you give that distance, you will get exactly what you give, distance. Or, of course, you understand that to, react with anger or frustration or criticism or anything like that, of course, that's going to get you nowhere. So yes, I admit that, let me finish that sentence and I have something else popped into my head. So yes, I admit that employing these principles and practices does in the short term create a situation where they will either react negatively and or try to distance themselves, but they won't be able to completely. And realize also, here's an additional point, that at the same time that they are trying to distance themselves, each interaction you create pulls them closer to you. So it's not like they're the only one taking action, and only their reaction means anything or has any consequences. No. Your initiatives have consequences as well, and there is a reaction to your initiative. Again, coming back to the example that I gave, if you send a really thoughtful gift, there will be, assuming the gift is on target, a positive reaction emotionally, initially, to that effort? I don't want to get distracted here, it's a whole other thing, but just recall my discussion in the program about how people don't choose their feelings. Your husband can't decide what to feel when he receives that gift. If it's on target, he will feel something. He will feel something positive. It creates a bit of a connection. It warms the environment. It pulls him closer to you. He doesn't have a choice about that. So it's not like, you know, it's only his distancing himself from you that is the only consequence to your efforts. Your question kind of suggests that. You don't say it directly, but I feel it from your question. And that's what I'm trying to add here to help you with some perspective. That is not the case. Each time every one of you make a positive effort, a bid toward your spouse, it has a positive effect. Oh, they don't react positively? Don't be distracted by that. Don't think that the reaction that they show you is the only indication of what is actually happening within them. The reason why you're getting a negative reaction or distance sometimes is because the reaction in them was actually positive, and they don't want to feel that. They don't want to feel close. They don't want to feel connected. They don't want to feel touched. They don't want to feel warm. They don't want to feel that you are making this valiant effort. And your efforts are making them feel that way. They can't control that. But they don't want to feel that, so the next step they can control, that is to sabotage, to distance, to be negative, to be unappreciative, to tell you to stop, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So that's an important point there. And there was one other thing I wanted to add, but it slipped my mind. And I think I spent enough time on the question. Thank you for your excellent question. I hope that response was helpful. Next one. I was out of town for the Q&A last month. I'll be again this month. And I thank you for answering my email about sexual touch last month. A lot has changed in a month. Explanation point. Two explanation points, actually. My husband of 23 years has resumed sexual intimacy with me, and it is incredible. My question is kind of strange this month. Can we be focusing too much on sex? We are enjoying passionate lovemaking 1 to 2 times a day, and I think about it constantly, explanation point, explanation point. After 10 years of nothing and even longer of not much, is it okay to honeymoon with my husband? All our issues seem a distant memory with all this newly awakened passion. Explanation point, explanation point. Wow, what a beautiful email. What a beautiful question. And I'm so happy to hear about your breakthrough. And the answer to your question, what exactly was the question again? Is it okay to honeymoon with my husband? Yes. Is it okay? It's more than okay. The kind of sex life that you're describing is the kind of sex life that should exist in every marriage. I was just listening to a podcast that talking, by the way, are you all listening to my podcasts? Mort Fertel has a podcast now. You should definitely listen to it. It's free, and I put some good information out there. Anyway, the reason why I was inspired to create a podcast is because I was getting so much benefit from everybody else's podcasts. I started to realize, hey, people are listening to podcasts out there, and it's a great way to get information out. So anyway, I was listening to a podcast recently, and it was revealing some research, fascinating research, that showed that the people with the most fulfilling sex life are people in long committed marriages. Fascinating, right? In other words, society would have us think that the most exciting, tantalizing, passionate sex lives are with people that just started dating, are with people that are with multiple partners, are with people that are always doing different things with different people at different times and different positions. And the research actually shows that people that are happily married for a long period of time are the people with the most fulfilling sex lives. And that should come as no surprise to all of you. And it really came as no surprise to me. I found it very validating, actually. The reason why it should come as no surprise to you and didn't surprise me is because physical intimacy is the natural outgrowth of an emotional connection. And if a husband and wife are really deeply emotionally connected, and the more emotionally connected they are, the more passionate and fulfilling that sex life is going to be. And it's people that are happily married and are really in mature love that have that deepest connection and therefore that deepest, most passionate sex life. So this is great to hear from your question what's happened in your marriage. And, you know, the sad thing is that, in a sense, that you're even asking the question, although I totally understand. What I mean by that is, it's sad that people would think to ask such a question, that they somehow think that this is not the kind of sex life you're supposed to have with your husband or wife. Like, this is the kind of sex life you're supposed to have when you're a teenager, or when you're dating, or when you're having an affair, you know, or when you're whatever. But with my husband, like, is this okay? You know, is this okay? Not only is this okay, this is the ideal. This is where you're supposed to be channeling that sexual energy. And the more you combine that sexual energy with the principles and practices that I'm teaching, which facilitate that connection, boom. I mean, it's electrifying. It's electrifying. Again, just referencing that research that I just heard, which is really fascinating, that the people with the most successful sex lives and fulfilling are people in long-standing successful marriages. Beautiful, fascinating. And let this be a lesson. I mean, I've spoken about this elsewhere. I don't think this should be a new message to all of you, but, you know, but just in case, let me cover it. A healthy, passionate, active sex life is a very, very, very important part of a marriage. And we should all be spending time and energy to cultivate that kind of fulfilling sex life. You know, it is sad that so many people that are married, you know, fall into this rut where they relegate, you know, the final 10 minutes of a night, you know, once a month to their sex life. Well, think about anything else that you think you do well or you want to do well or you do well. If you relegated 10 minutes at the end of the day after you exhausted your tank on everything else once a month, would you be any good at it? Would it be fulfilling? No. You would suck at it, you know. So how are you supposed to, you know, relegate a few minutes once a month at the end of the night when you're exhausted to something and expect it to work? And so this is something we should really be investing in. And, you know, sometimes people think that this is like a little shallow, you know, shouldn't we be talking about feelings and all this stuff? No. This is a marriage. You know, men and women have a sex drive, and you know, there is so much, oh my, it's sickening to me, so much discussion about this topic of sex that is totally misguided and inappropriate in the media, in our society, amongst friends and family. People are so obsessed with this topic, but usually in ways that are totally unhealthy and dysfunctional. The one way and the one place where it is healthy and functional is in the context of a sacred marriage. That's where it belongs, in the privacy of your bedroom, in the sanctity of a marriage. Enjoy it there. Okay, let's go to the phones.
Hi, Mort.
Yes.
Hi, my name is Lisa.
Good evening, Lisa.
Hello. I'm dealing with an obstinate spouse who has a mistress. He told me a couple of weeks ago he wanted to reconcile, and I thought things were going really well, and then today he just sent me a text message a few hours ago saying I should expect to be served papers this week. So my question is that normal, and what do I do?
Well, let's skip the first question because who cares?
Okay.
Like, I mean, unless you can explain to me why it matters. First of all, what's normal? Smoking cigarettes 100 years ago was normal. So?
Sure.
Right? I just don't think that's I don't think it's a helpful question. I don't think it really matters. What should you do? That's a great question. Very simple. Nothing. You should ignore the text.
Okay.
There's nothing for you to do. Don't give it any attention. Now you might be asking. Well, let me let you ask. Go ahead. Do you have a follow-up question?
Yeah. So if the papers do get served, and I've listened to a lot of the Q&As, I mean, I guess I just keep going as is. And keep doing, you know, everything I've been doing because it seems to be working. I'm getting reciprocation. The text message to me today was a surprise.
Right.
And I guess I keep going.
Yeah, so I anticipated your question. And when you get served, there's a lot of information already in the program about it. I just want to review a piece that seems particularly relevant to your question, is important to everybody. When you get served, it's really important that you not blink. Or don't flinch. Don't do or change anything. From your husband's perspective, this is a dramatic moment that you'll surely react to. In fact, in many cases, the reason why they file is to try to create this drama that sends you off the rails, that like finally sort of gets through to you and gets you to stop. It's really important that, again, don't blink. Don't change a thing. In fact, you know you've succeeded when your husband contacts his attorney and says, I think something went wrong. I don't think she got it. I don't think they served her. Yeah, they did. They did. I have the records right here. The server has the signature. No, I don't think so. I'm pretty sure it didn't happen. No, it did, really, sir. I promise you. Oh, okay. I don't quite get this then. That's what should happen.
Okay.
There should really be zero acknowledgement, and your response, there should be no response, so much so that he doesn't even think you got it.
Okay.
Thank you for the question.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Hi, Mort. This is Stephanie.
Hello, Stephanie. Good evening.
Good evening. So I have an obstinate spouse. Imagine that.
Right.
Like we, most of us do. My question stems from in trying to destroy his story and ruin his story of what he's telling himself and others about, you know, me. One of the things that he has told a couple of people that it's now gotten back around to me is that I'm just doing what I want anyway, and it doesn't matter what he wants. And I think that's coming from the talk charges. I had been doing multiple ones when we were communicating well, but the last probably month or so, he has really stopped answering, you know, my calls, responding in any way, shape, or form. And I'm wondering if I'm not stopping what I'm doing, but I'm wondering if that's coming across as being controlling as opposed to being loving.
Right. I understand your question. It depends how it's – your question is about how it's coming across. That's a very very difficult question for me to answer because it's hard for me to speak to your husband's perception since I don't know him. But I'll add some color that I think will help you. If your husband perceives you as controlling in general, in other words, if I were to ask him now, you know, what's wrong with Stephanie, what's wrong with your marriage – and he said she's controlling. I said, "Oh, you felt controlled? Oh yeah, I felt controlled." And he gave me like 100 different examples of how you were controlling. So then, you know, you could swat a fly in the sunroom, and he would accuse you of it being controlling. But, you know, you could do a somersault on the patio, and he would accuse you of being controlling. Like, if there is this history of him feeling controlled, it doesn't, don't be distracted by his perception that what you're doing is controlling. There's nothing you could do that wouldn't be interpreted by him as controlling. That's just the lens through which he sees things right now. But that doesn't mean that it is. So more important than his perception is what you're actually doing. Now, there's that whole discussion in the program about the balance between courage and consideration, and then I talk maybe in the same place or in a different place about how that should lead to mutual consent, and how very often the challenges that people face in their marriage is that there wasn't mutual consent, but that somebody was acting unilaterally, that they were domineering, they were controlling. So if you were in that kind of marriage, and if he perceived you as the controlling one, then the chances are good, very good, that he did feel controlled, and that you do have a tendency to be strong, domineering, too much, however you want to describe it. And so you should be really being deeply introspective about your marital history, your tendencies, the way you handle things, your exacting nature, you know, all these things that we've talked about before. You should be really, really introspective and incredibly careful about soliciting his opinion, soliciting his input, you know, making decisions with mutual consent, not acting unilaterally. In other words, there probably were dozens and dozens of ways in which you were controlling that you need to change. But here's the punchline. That doesn't mean that you were controlling in every way and need to change everything. And that doesn't mean that the new principles and practices that you're employing are controlling. So you have to be very careful. You know, on the one hand, you want to be sensitive to your husband's feelings. You want to be really deeply introspective about what's been going on in your marriage and make changes that, you know, to address dysfunctions. But, you know, you can't become like so overwhelmed and obsessed with one particular thing that you see everything through that lens, you know, it's just because your husband is. And in the long run, you know, there's a huge dysfunction here that has to unwind, and he's part of that dysfunction. So the best way you can contribute to it unwinding is doing your part to be healthy and functional. And here, I'll come in full circle to, you know, to your question. You know, there is nothing controlling about talking to your husband. Right? And very often, and maybe this will help explain it too, very often what happens in these situations when one person is overboard on courage, that's probably you in this situation, and the other spouse is overboard on consideration, that's probably your husband in this situation. So very often when the marriage blows up, usually that's when the person who's overboard on consideration says, okay, that's it, that's enough, now things are going to be my way. So the irony is that now they become the controlling, domineering spouse that they accused their wife of being all of these years. It's ironic, right? I mean, if you were a jerk from his perspective by being controlling in those ways, then what does that make him when he became, when I say controlling, meaning, I'm sorry if that wasn't clear. Coming back to his statement, you know, like, it doesn't matter what I want. You know, he's feeling like, I'm telling you not to call me, and you're calling me, so that's controlling. Well, that's sort of ironic, right? Like, is it really my job in our marriage to roll over and comply with your every demand? Like, that's very controlling, right? That you have the expectation that you control when we talk and when we don't talk, you know, that I not call you, like, that's very controlling. But that's not surprising, because very often in these situations, the spouses switch roles. And the one who was passive and was constantly subjugating themselves to their spouse's will now all of a sudden says, now things are going to be my way. And they act unilaterally and expect their spouse to be completely compliant. And the other spouse who was controlling wakes up and says, oh my gosh, I didn't even realize my spouse felt this and my spouse felt that. They thought I was controlling, and they really had all these thoughts and opinions and wants, but they didn't express them. And oh my gosh, now I just better subjugate myself to what they want and give them everything they want all the time. And it's ironic, because I promise you, if it didn't work when you were controlling and he was passive, it will not work when you're passive and he's controlling. Don't switch roles. You will accomplish absolutely nothing. The answer is emotional maturity, which, referencing that audio file, is the balance between courage and consideration. Exercising good judgment about when to bring to the table courage and when to bring to the table consideration. By the way, I assume I'm referencing things here without explaining them, because I just assume you are all masters of these concepts at this point. And if not, you should return to those very important audio files that discuss them in length. So, anyway, I hope that's helpful. Keep making those calls. And not just calls. I mean, calls are, you know, they're great, but nobody ever saved their marriage by doing talk charges. People who succeed to save their marriage are people who employ, you know, dozens and dozens of principles and practices that we're teaching. So you should be taking initiative on lots of different fronts. Okay, let's go on.
Hello, Mark. This is
yes,
Michael.
Sir. Michael, did you say?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Been doing this in the Lone Ranger track, and we made a lot of progress until the end of June, and I noticed my wife started pulling back all through July, and Friday, she said that she just didn't want to do this anymore, didn't think this was what she wanted, and I mean, she's completely pulled back. I mean, she doesn't answer my phone calls, doesn't return texts. I just, you know, I'm kind of lost. I don't know what to do next.
I mean, I can't explain, you know, what your wife is doing now, why she reacted this way, especially after you made such good progress. I can just tell you that it's not unusual for these situations to, you know, be like a roller coaster. You know, it's usually not a straight line from, you know, broken marriage to reconciliation with no bumps in between. You know, so the direct answer to your question in terms of what to do next is probably the same as what you did last. Like, whatever you were doing that was being productive, you should continue doing it. The whole program is an answer to your question. I don't think there's anything new or different you should be doing because of the fact that all of a sudden, inexplicably, you know, your wife has, you know, gone sort of silent and all of a sudden is not responding in the same way. You haven't shared with me anything. Doesn't mean it's not there. It could be we just need more time. But you haven't shared with me anything that it would be reflective of that change, and therefore I have no new advice for you. I can just tell you that in many other situations with many other people and many other cases, it's just consistency and not getting distracted that will, you know, will draw her back in.
Hello, it's Christina.
Hi, Christina. Good evening.
Hello. Hi. Good evening.
Yeah.
Hi. So, my husband's been married for 6 years. and about 4 months ago he left home. And my question is, you say in many of your audio files that that your spouse is telling themselves a story, and that we are, that I am in this case, the villain of that story. But I've been noticing in the times where I have been interacting my husband face to face that it seems to be painting himself as the villain, and that's confusing me. So I'm hearing things like him saying, "Oh, I hate that made you feel like a bad person because I said that I was fixing myself, and I told him that I wasn't discussing the marital situation with anybody else because he said exactly what you said, which was it can be the same because your auntie won't like me anymore." And then he said things like, and then I told him, "Well, I haven't been discussing any of our marital situation with anybody but you and I." And he says things like, "I don't deserve to be protected by you." And he's very kind of self, he seems to self-loathe himself. And my question is, would you call this obstinance? And how should I approach it when he says things? What do I do when he actually attacks himself rather than me, if that makes sense?
Yeah. I don't know that he's... I would question the sincerity of those attacks on him, on himself.
Okay.
I more than likely, he's looking for rationale. He's looking for explanations to exit. He's trying to, explain why this can't work, why this won't work.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, you're doing such a good job that he could not be so foolish as to try to blame it on you. That in his mind, that won't seem to fly. So
okay.
He's going to blame it on himself. I'm not good enough. I'll never be good enough.
Yeah.
I made these mistakes.
You don't love me, etc. Blah.
I don't deserve you. It actually does two things. It gives him a reason to exit, but probably more importantly, is it absolves him of responsibility. If I say I can't do it, then I don't have to try.
Yeah.
And that's, that's what a person is doing, really, when they say I can't do it, is they are relieving themselves of the responsibility and the burden of trying. And the question is, what should you do in reaction to that?
Yeah.
All right. So what you should do is you should profess your belief in him. In other words, brush off his pessimism with optimism. "Oh, what are you kidding? Of course you can do it. It's not so hard. We can do this together."
Mm-hmm.
You have many wonderful qualities, and over the years have been a great husband in the following ways. And the changes required are not that difficult. We just have to learn how to go about it. We can accomplish anything. I don't want to put out there just a bunch of platitudes and cliches, but just it has to be sincere, of course. But in a genuine way, you should promote your belief in him. "I believe in you. You can do this." It has to be sincere, right? In other words, I'm not telling you to say that he has done it, because without getting into the details, there's a reasonable chance that he's failed you in many ways. And you shouldn't deny or ignore those failings. Then it'll just come across as disingenuous. But see, but believe in him. See beyond those failures. Remember the amazing qualities that you observed and that he demonstrated years before, maybe when you fell in love. Remember them, believe in them, and profess this optimism that you know, that you can do it. I know you can. And constantly. Oh, I think I just clicked on someone else.
Hello?
Someone. Yeah, hi.
Hi. Should I go silent?
My apologies, Christina, for abruptly clicking off you. I didn't mean to do that. But anyway, I was kind of finished answering your question. So, what's your name?
Tiffany.
Tiffany?
Yes.
Okay, Tiffany, how can I help?
So I'm going to be meeting my husband tomorrow to give him some mail, and then the intention is to talk about finances. And I know that we're not supposed to talk about separating any of our assets, et cetera, but so far to date, he hasn't been contributing anything to the mortgage, the bills, et cetera, so I've been carrying everything myself. And I guess I'm just not quite sure how to handle that type of conversation if it goes in a direction of him saying he's not going to pay or contribute anything anymore because he's trying to get me to agree to work towards a divorce.
Why would he say that if he's already done it? What would be the point of the conversation?
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, I just don't see. You're saying he's already taken that action, so why would the conversation come after? You really think he would do that?
I think he just continues to not put any money towards the bills.
No, I understand what he's doing, or as you say, not doing. But
right.
Now what you're saying is when you see him tomorrow and give him mail, he's going to talk to you about the fact that he's not doing it, that he's not contributing?
Yeah, I think because he wants me to talk about selling the house, he wants me to talk about other things,
so
using it as a manipulation tactic, I think.
Fine. So I'll accept that your judgment on that. It's fine. And you know your husband certainly better than I do. I don't know him at all. Question is, what should you do if you bring it up? I don't think my response will surprise you. You've heard, I think, the answer to this question before. Maybe you just don't recognize it in a different context. You should politely, but firmly, just let him know that this is not a topic that you're able to discuss with him. That he essentially is trying to draw you into a discussion about how to dissolve or destroy the marriage. That you're his wife. You are committed to your husband and your marriage. And it just would be a violation of your values to do anything or discuss anything that's designed to destroy the family. You can't control him. You're not trying to control him. This is America. If he wants to divorce you, he can. But your message to him is, don't ask me to help you, because I can't do it. Can't have that on my record, can't have it on my conscience, can't have that as an example to our children. What else do you want to talk about?
Well, and how can I get him to contribute financially without talking about anything? Okay.
You can't.
Do you ever go the route of threatening a lawyer, or is that just detrimental?
Very detrimental. Look, you know, if God forbid you end up, I'm not a lawyer, right? But my understanding is if God forbid you end up getting divorced, whatever he's paying for or not paying for now is irrelevant because it's all going to be calculated at the end and it'll be taken into consideration when things are divided up. So from a financial point of view, I'm not sure in the long run there's really anything you're compromising. Although in the short term, I realize there might be cash flow issues. But anyway, I don't want to talk about the law or money because I'm the marriage guy, and I think that focusing on what's best for the marriage is more important than focusing on what's best for your pocketbook. I would be happy to admit, if necessary, that the advice that I give sometimes compromises people's financial rights or financial situation. I'm okay with that. I think people should be able to be willing to spend whatever is necessary to maximize the likelihood of saving their family. I believe it's worth it, and I think it's correct priorities. But to ask him to, I don't think you can, you know, do anything to make him pay for anything. What you can do, and this is okay, in just the same way that he wants to try to talk to you about dividing up assets or selling the house or whatever crazy ideas he has about moving things along, which you should just end the conversation and refuse to participate in, what you can do is you certainly can come to your husband with marital financial matters and try to discuss them with him. I wouldn't do it at the same time that he's trying to have the discussion with you. But at a different time, you can certainly do that. You know, the mortgage is $3,000 this month. You know, like, how do you want to handle that? Or, you know, we have to pay Joey's tuition coming up in, you know, next month. Like, you know, do you want to plan for that? In other words, you should, in just the way that, well, actually, no, let me not go there. In other words, what I'm saying is that you should be trying to lead, not follow him. And your leadership should be, you should be promoting the two of you as a team, as together responsible for whatever financial responsibilities, you know, you have. And so, you know, you can feel free. Now, you know, if he is trying to go in the opposite direction, it could be that he responds by saying, what are you talking about? I'm not contributing a penny to that. We're getting divorced. Okay. It could be that he will say that, you know, I don't know. But it doesn't matter. Even if we predict that he would say that, I would still advise you to promote this idea of you being together responsible, like a husband and wife are in a marriage. And, yeah. Okay.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey, Mort, it's Matt.
Good evening, Matt.
Hi, I've been in the program for 2 years, and my situation started when my wife filed. I guess the situation started before that, but there was no discussion beforehand. But so I think we're on other man number 4 now.
Wow.
And I've noticed, you know, as time progresses that, when there's another man in the picture, especially kind of early on, there's a whole lot of excitement on her part and, you know, a lot of pushing back against any of the efforts that I make. And then, you know, when that other man fades out, things kind of pick up again. So do you advise, it seems to me it's unwise to kind of go full thrust with all of the aspects of the program when there's another man in the picture, because it seems to have more of a negative effect than a positive effect. And then, you know, I kind of wait out the storm again and for him to disappear, you know, remaining somewhat doing things, but not all the way. And then kind of pick it up again.
Yeah, I don't
that.
Know if I would say it quite like that. But I don't think I would disagree with what you're saying, but I would just say it differently and it ends up having a different flavor to it. You're saying it as if it's you that is sort of calibrating your effort based on her involvement or not involvement with another man. I wouldn't say it that way. I think it's important that your efforts be consistent, be coming from an inner wellspring of love and devotion and learning in the program. And, like, you shouldn't be calibrating based on your prediction of your wife's reaction or her involvement or not involvement with another man. You should be consistent. Now, I would expect her involvement, her response, her reciprocation, her reaction, I would expect that to change based on her involvement or lack of involvement with another man. So in the end, I think you end up with what you described, but how you get there, I'd like to see that be different. Does that make sense?
It does. Can you elaborate a bit on the last point?
What was the last point? That how you get there is the same? Sorry, how you get there is different, but where you end up is the same?
Yeah, please.
Meaning that you end up in this place like you described, where, you know, your involvement with her and progress with her is more in depth when she's not involved with another man. She gives, you know, you have more, you're more involved in making more progress. And when she's involved with another man, you're less involved in making less progress. That's what you described. And I'm agreeing that the chances are good that you're going to end up in the same place. My suggestion is that you end up there not because you're calibrating, but because you're getting a different response from her.
Okay.
It's an important distinction. Thanks for the question.
Hi, Mort.
Hi there.
This is Cecilia.
Cecilia.
So my husband moved out in mid-January, and he wouldn't reach out to me or talk to me for a month and a half, and he would only communicate by email. And then in late February, he agreed to come home and to see me, and he's been now coming home 1 to 2 weekends a month, and things have been getting better, especially since I've joined the program in May. And, you know, the times that we spent together seem to be going well, and we're physically intimate, and we're friendly with each other. But then in between those visits, he, you know, doesn't pick up my calls most of the time. And I just feel like I don't understand why. It's like whenever we're together, things go well. And then when we're apart, he seems so distant. And I just feel like I'm being used. And then I stop and think, you know, it's like, no, I got to keep doing what I'm doing, employing the practice and principles. And I stop and think, and it's like, you know, what would Mort want me to do at this point? So I continue on, but I just still can't help the feeling of being used. And I don't know how to handle the feelings of rejection and feeling like I'm being taken advantage of, especially after, you know, the times that we spent together go really well. And then when we're apart, things seem to not be the same, and it seems so confusing.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure how to respond to you in a way that could be very helpful, because, you know, you're basically saying that you have ill feelings when your husband ignores you, and I don't know how I can help you with that. I mean, I would feel the same way. I think what you're feeling is normal. Anybody would be feeling that way. I'm sorry your husband is... I mean, I'm so happy to hear about your progress. It sounds like you've made enormous progress. That's terrific. And I hope and I expect things will, you know, continue positively for you. You know, why he distances himself from you occasionally when he's not there, I don't know. I don't know why it's happening, and there's certainly nothing I could say that would result in you feeling good about that. Who could feel good about that?
Mm-hmm.
So remember, we don't control our feelings. We do control how we respond, what we do in the face of those feelings. And so feelings are natural. They're spontaneous. They just emerge from interactions or lack of interactions. In your case, and you're going to feel bad when you're treated that way. The best thing you can do is, I don't want to say accept it, that sounds such a cliche, but understand that I'm not doing anything wrong when I feel like that. It's just a normal reaction to how I'm being treated. The most important thing is that you don't respond in some destructive way, right? Like, mm-hmm. just for example, sometimes people will say, well, you know, if he's not going to speak to me, I'm not going to speak to him. And then you get this stalemate, you know, this silent treatment going both ways. Right? That's just an example, but don't let him lead when he's being destructive. Make sure you provide good, helpful leadership. Also, the other thing I would say is that you said that you've made progress. If you think you've made enough progress, talk with him about this. If you think that your marriage can handle it, if you think that might be productive, might provide some insight.
I have been thinking a lot about that lately.
Yeah, maybe it would be a good idea. I mean, I'll take the opportunity to remind all of you that of an important word often seems to be unheard or forgotten. Not unheard, forgotten. The word is temporary. In the very beginning of the program, when I talk about putting the problems aside, I talk about putting them aside temporarily for the purpose of building goodwill, creating connection, and getting the relationship to the point where you can handle, you know, these certain discussions. So, I don't know, maybe you've gotten to the point where you can handle and it's worthwhile trying to discuss it. Something to consider.
Hi, Mort. This is Angel.
Good evening, Angel. How are you tonight?
I'm doing okay. So my question has to do with trust. I'm trying to convey that I believe in him, that I trust him, and that I respect him, even when he's making poor decisions. So I know he's using illegal drugs and sleeping with multiple women who also use drugs. But I did add him back to my checking account last week as a joint owner. Since we are married, it's not my money, it's ours. Even though he has his own separate account that I don't have access to. Mm-hmm. So, of course, over the weekend, he withdrew large sums of money. I was kind of worried that probably, I can only assume. He hasn't told me he's doing drugs. He hasn't told me he's having affairs. I just know this to be true. Do I do anything with that, or do I just ignore the cash withdrawals? Because I don't care if we go to bankruptcy. It doesn't bother me. Like, if that's where I have to go, then that's where I have to go, because my relationship with him is more important than our bank account and our credit scores and whatever.
I admire your attitude very much, and it's as you probably know, it's pretty consistent with the attitude that I promote, that I suggest. However, these things do require judgment, and not everything is, some things are black and white, but not everything is. I do say, I'm pretty sure I'm on record saying this, that, in 99.9% of the cases, what I'm about to say is not relevant, but I'm concerned that it might be in yours. And that is, I say, if you're going to end up homeless and bankrupt and no food on the table, not able to clothe your kids, like, that is a different situation. Now, 99.9% of the cases, that is not people's situation. Right? People are concerned about, only ending up with $3 million instead of $5 million, or they're going to get, $100,000.
We don't have small kids, nor do we own a house.
Okay. Still, you're entitled to, look, I don't know. Okay, I don't want to get too much into the weeds, because I want to talk in a way that will benefit everybody that's listening. If you're if your earning potential is significant, you don't rely on a nest egg or savings to live or for something like that. So then, So then I would agree with you. You know, then I would agree with you. In other words, if you lost it, there are plenty of people, and maybe you're one of them, plenty of people. Their earning potential is so significant that if they lost every penny to their name, they would be fine. I mean, I remember having this conversation. I've had it many times. But just this week I had a conversation with a gentleman who, he was concerned about some financial matters and, you know, doing certain things. What impact would it have? He ends up divorced or his wife spends that. I said, look, I mean, this is a guy who's like in his early 40s. He owns his own company. He's highly educated. He's highly talented. I mean, like, I said to him, as I often do to people, like, let's take the absolute worst case, probably unrealistic scenario. Let's say she takes everything. Come on. You can make plenty of money. And there are people like that. Their earning potential is so significant that what they actually have in the bank now is irrelevant. And so, you know, if that's the case with you, then I think your attitude is on target. But there are people that are not in that situation. You know, there are people who, you know, your spouse, God forbid, is a drug addict. I mean, this is not a small thing. You know, I mean, drug addicts are, you know, they're in the grips of the devil. I mean, they're completely out of control. And getting that next hit is the only thing that matters. There is absolutely no reasoning, no rationale, no thinking, that goes into their life. The only thing that matters to them is where they're going to get the next hit, and they will destroy everybody and everything around them to get it. And you're not responsible for standing in the way of that, necessarily. So anyway, those are kind of the two scenarios. If your earning potential is significant, then you can, you know, it's not going to be the end of the world if you end up going bankrupt. Then you wouldn't necessarily be expected to. I don't think you're responsible to, but I don't think it would be crazy to take the attitude you're suggesting. If, on the other hand, it's going to put you really in jeopardy of being able to lead a normal life with a roof over your head and food on the table, then I think you should make, you know, other plans, and you don't have to do that. Okay. Let's go on.
Hello, Mark. Can you hear me?
Hi. Loud and clear.
Okay. My name's Tara, and I'm new to the Plugged In program.
Mm-hmm.
And my question, I have an obstinate spouse, and he is not aware that I'm in your program, and I'm anticipating a time coming up where I will want to share this with him. And my concern is that he will think that I'm not being authentic, or I just read a book, or those kinds of things. And I just wanted to ask maybe some strategies on how I can present this to him in a way that he will see it as positive. And I've obviously made tons of changes within myself and had a ton of self-reflection, and things are moving in the right direction for us. I hope.
I think it's an interesting question. I think the most important thing is that you first be able to really answer that question for yourself. And here's what I think the answer is. But I don't want you to just regurgitate what I say. You have to really see this and believe this, as I do. I find it terribly bothersome and a bit silly when somebody says something like, you got that from a book. It's not authentic. I don't understand that.
Right.
Yeah, I got it from a book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I learned it on an audio file. Yeah, I was on a teleconference or in a program. So, what is inauthentic about that?
It's
you know,
true. Yeah.
LeBron James shoots a jump shot in a particular way. And now I don't know anything about basketball. I don't think I could list. I couldn't name for you another basketball player in the NBA right now, other than LeBron James. But I know that name. Right? He shoots a jump shot in a particular way. Now I can guarantee you, because of where he's gotten to, that he shoots it in that particular way because somebody taught him to. He read it in a book, so to speak. He followed someone's direction. That's how you achieve any level of competency. And is anybody accusing him of being inauthentic? That's not the natural way to shoot a jump shot. Well, yeah, no duh. The natural way to shoot a jump shot, you can go to a playground and watch a five-year-old. You know? And is that the way we want him to shoot a jump shot when he's 25? I mean, it's just the question, you know, if your husband were to ask it, or for anybody who asks it, I have such a visceral reaction to the question itself. There is an assumption underlying the question that is so incredibly unsophisticated and immature, at the root of the question is this silliness that a person should act in a relationship, that authenticity in a relationship means doing what's natural. That's just the stupidest thing I ever heard of. I mean, for 99.9% of us, doing what's natural in a relationship is totally dysfunctional. Succeeding in a marriage is no different than succeeding on the basketball court, succeeding in the courtroom, succeeding in the operating room, succeeding in the office. It's a matter of learning how to do it and disciplining yourself to do it in a way that's effective. Now, somebody that correlates authenticity with sort of naturalness, or let's put it the other way, authenticity with lacking discipline, I just don't get that. I don't see the virtue, right? That's a good way to put it, right? Mm-hmm. Your husband or anybody who, and there are plenty of people that think this way, right? They're somehow assigning some virtue to just acting naturally without direction. I don't see it that way. I see it the opposite. I think that's stupid.
Yeah.
I don't think it's virtuous at all. It's foolish.
Well, and I think, yeah, and I think for him, I wonder if the underlying question is just, again, if he's being manipulated, if the changes that he's seeing aren't real, and they're going to just go back to the way that
that's different.
Before.
Yeah, that's different,
yeah.
And that's a fair question. So that you've heard me talk about in the program, right? That
right.
Problem or answer or question is answered or solved with one word. Do you remember that one word?
Yeah, consistency. Yep.
You're a good student. That's right. So that's a different question. It's a good question, and we've covered that.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And remind him, you know, if he wants to listen to that audio file, I'm pretty sure I talk there about how, you know, your husband doesn't get to decide. He doesn't have to decide when to trust that the changes are real. All he has to do is experience the changes. And if you're consistent, one day, usually within a year, he will realize they are real. It's not a decision. It's just an experience.
My favorite
and your
solution
consistency,
would be to...
What?
I was just going to add to that, or a question of that is, like, my favorite way to do it would be to wait to tell him about it until I got to that point. But just don't know.
Yeah, I don't think you... Yeah. Oh, so that now you're asking even a different question, which is a fine one as well, which is, should I or when do I tell him about the program? It sounds like you're making progress. Unless there's some compelling reason to tell him about it, you don't need to. I mean, don't misunderstand. You shouldn't lie to him if he asks, and it doesn't have to be a secret, but you know, you're certainly allowed to read a book, participate in a program, and, you know, do something for your own, you know, character development and growth in marriage. And he doesn't have to know about every, you know, I mean, my wife doesn't know about every podcast I listen to, and you know, every single thing. Well, she pretty much knows about everything I read because my books are around. But anyway, if I did read a book in the office, I wouldn't necessarily feel an obligation to tell her that I read it. Necessarily, it wouldn't be something I would hide either. But I'm just saying, you don't have to. I don't know. You would have to be convinced that there's some reason or purpose or benefit for sharing it with him. Now, it could be at some point down the line you want him to join you in the program. Okay, so obviously that's a reason to tell him. Or it could be that he asks directly, Joss, I've seen all these changes. Where is it coming from? Okay, that's a direct question. You should give him a direct answer. It's not a secret. But out of the blue, I don't think you have to just, you know, tell him that you're in the program just because you are. Not necessary. Okay, let's go on.
Hi, Morit.
Hi there.
Hi, can you hear me?
Loud and clear. Yeah, what's your name?
Okay, my name is Natalie.
Okay, Natalie, how can I help?
I'm wondering, how do you not become discouraged when your husband has filed for divorce the year and a half ago? And
you're breaking up, Natalie.
Can you hear me?
Connection is not so good, but I heard your question. How do you become not discouraged when your husband filed for divorce?
Right. Right.
I don't know.
He canceled 2 days before the court date. So because he realized that he was being selfish and he...
you're breaking up. What did he do 2 days before the court date?
Canceled it.
Canceled it. Okay.
Yes, yes. So he...
Natalie, I think I lost you.
No, I'm still here. I'm still here.
Okay.
My question is, he had come to, he had realized that he was being selfish and he made a mistake. And so he canceled the divorce. But it has now been 8 months and nothing's changed. And he won't even talk to me about it.
So what's your question?
So my question is, how do you move forward in a marriage that you've decided that you've made a mistake, and then how do you move? One person can change a marriage, but how do you remain in a marriage when only one person has made changes or is striving towards healing at this point? When how can you be married when only one person is working towards a marriage?
What's he working towards?
I have no idea. He won't talk to me about it. He won't talk to me about anything.
Is he engaged with you in any way, shape, or form? I mean, what's the marriage like now?
It's exactly how it was. I mean, it's better because we are, you know, not fighting, but it's the same habits. Nothing's changed, and he's just going about his business just like he was before, which was not the reason why we got to this point was because he has a problem with the truth. So I've been married for 12 years in September, and we've been together for 15, and 14 of those years he had been lying to me.
About what?
About everything. About money. He hadn't paid his taxes in 10 years, and then I bought a house and bragged about how he paid everything in cash because he never wanted to be in debt. He didn't have any credit cards. He didn't have this. He didn't have that. Fine. We got married. We bought a house, and he didn't have any credit because he paid for everything in cash, which was what I thought. And so the house was in my name, the mortgage is in my name, and 6 months after we bought the house, I got a lien put on my house because of unpaid taxes. So that's how it started. and it's just snowballed from there. So these you know, tooth issues were long before me. I mean, this is the way he's lived his life, unfortunately. So it's not, you know, so the reason why we've been fighting for 14 years is because I've been trying to say to him, why are you destroying our marriage? Why are you lying to me? And he won't admit responsibility for the destruction.
Your question is, how do you stay in a marriage?
Right.
Like the one you're describing.
Yeah.
And it could be that you don't.
That's where I'm getting
to. It
could
be you don't, but before you come to that conclusion, I would just suggest that you make that Herculean effort that I describe for the period of time that I describe. In other words, you're confessing your husband's sins, and I believe you. I believe you. And it sounds pretty extreme, by the way, even in my world. And I hear
And that's so, just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, but regardless of his sins, you should take responsibility for what you can do for a certain period of time. And if you've done it, and you've done it for that period of time, and what you're describing continues unabated, it could be that you can't and shouldn't stay in that marriage. But I can't tell you that on a Q&A teleconference. we would need more time privately, one-on-one. Okay, let's try one last question.
It's Tom.
I'm sorry, what? Hello?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Okay, it's Tom.
Hello, Tom.
So, for about the past month and a half, I've been trying to talk charges and all that stuff. My wife won't answer my phone calls, sends me right to voicemail. In fact, one time she tried even blocking my number. Now, when I see her out, she's fine. You know, if we run into each other at a graduation party or something, she talks to me, that kind of thing. But then the next day, right back to the same old way. And I had an hour phone conference with you about the apology letter, and you had said just ask her to talk to you for 20 minutes and see how that works. Well, when I asked her for that, she told me when you didn't.
I would have never said 20 minutes, by the way.
Or whatever, you know, to give me time to talk to her. She said, when I give her a divorce, she'll give me time to talk to her. So how do I, that's the one thing I think can start to move the dial is the apology letter, but I can't get in front of her to do that.
So what's your question?
How do I get her to give me some time to at least
I don't have a suggestion
letter?
Other than the one I gave you on that during that private session, which simply for everyone else's benefit is, you know, just say to your spouse, I have something important I need to discuss with you. When can we talk? And there are instances like the one Tom is describing where, you know, they'll use that as an opportunity to punish you or try to manipulate you, which is what she's doing. Okay, so now's not the right time then.
Okay.
You know, keep it on your radar. Keep looking for the opportunity. You'll get it. Until then, and I wouldn't, you know, as much as I value and recommend this apology letter and discussion, I do think it's, you know, a terrific exercise that is, you know, often helpful. I wouldn't say that, you know, it's the only thing that's going to move the needle in any particular situation. That there's never any one thing that is the thing that moves the needle in any situation. I just don't find that it works that way. So it's the people that are successful, you've heard me say it many times, people that are successful and turn things around are people that are dogged and look for lots of little opportunities various opportunities every day to try to move the needle. And they're never hanging their hats on, you know, one principle, practice, or exercise. As good as they all are, none of them are that good. And in the end of the day, it's really a collection of all of those efforts consistently that ultimately moves the needle. Thank you all for your excellent questions. Hope you found my responses helpful. Keep up the good work. Let me know what else I can do to help. Good night, everybody.